Hello, everyone. It's Diane Moxley with NJ Revolution Radio. We have a great panel this evening. We're going to talk about the crisis in Venezuela. But first, we have an event to promo. On April 4th, we have a community cannabis forum, and that is going to be at the Mount Zion Baptist Church in Pleasantville with our very own Henry Hank Green. We're going to have our New Jersey weed man present, and we've done some work with Ed in the past, so we're glad to have him on board. And of course, co-host by New Jersey Revolution Radio. So that is April 4th, 7 to 9 p.m. at 350 South New Road in Pleasantville. And as always, we appreciate your donations. So please go to njrevolutionradio.com and visit our donation link. Thanks so much, viewers. So this evening, we have Kevin Zeese with us. He is the co-director of Popular Resistance. And most recently, he co-authored an article. It's Venezuela, What Activists Need to Know About the U.S.-Led Coup. We have Christian Perez with the podcast Modernity and Absurdity. He is an adjunct professor of political science. We have Miguel Patino. He is a member of the Colombian Human Rights Network. This evening, he will be speaking as his capacity as a member of the Colombian Grassroots Support. And he is an attorney and longtime political activist from Colombia.
Right.
So thank you so much for being with us this evening. I know there is so much propaganda out there about what's going on in Venezuela, and there is, you know, maybe accessible to our viewers only about, you know, a very small handful of news sources that we have to dig through and comb through to try to find out what's really going on. So that's why we wanted to do this panel this evening, to give our viewers, hopefully, you know, propaganda free. I know we're all propaganda free. propaganda free news about what is really going on. So to start, if you know, we want to talk about the timeline about what got, how did Venezuela get to where we are today, where we are looking at the very serious possibility that U.S. was involved with an attempted coup. Kevin, I know you're in your article, you gave a good timeline. So do you want to give us some information on?
Sure, I can give it a try. I mean, this has been an ongoing coup really since Hugo Chavez was elected. But what happened recently was last year, President Maduro won re-election in a very legitimate election, no matter what you hear in the media. He won with 67% of the vote, 48% of the people voted. The claim of illegitimacy comes from the opposition because the opposition boycotted the election. So they said, since we boycotted it and had 46% of the people showing up, which is not too bad compared to U.S. elections, that makes it illegitimate. But in fact, there were election observers. I was an election observer down there. I was in Venezuela for election day. And there's no question it was a legitimate election. But this crisis really begins with Donald Trump in mid-2017 talking about a military attack on Venezuela, a war on Venezuela. And he was very clear about the oil that Venezuela has. Mm-hmm. And John Bolton's very clear about that as well. Mm-hmm. And since then, he's been talking to Latin American leaders and his cabinet about what we can do about Venezuela. With the election of Maduro, again, a six-year term, they really had to figure out what to do. And they've been looking for a way to do a coup. His previous Secretary of State, Tillerson, did a regime change tour before he was left office. His current Secretary of State did a tour as well, urging regime change. And they have been urging the people of Venezuela to rise up, the military take over. And they finally found someone who will you take the job. And the guy, Guaido, has been a long-term project of U.S. regime change. He was educated at George Washington University under a former IMF lead banker, Venezuelan economist. But NED's had their money into him as well. They've been working on him for 10 years. He's a legislator no one had heard of. He's from the second smallest state. He only got about 20% of the vote in the legislative race. And the National Assembly, which is in contempt of court because of its illegality, we can go into that later, appointed him as president. And he accepted the nomination, self-appointed him as president. The night before that, Mike Pence called him, said, "We'll support you." The day before that, Mike Pence put a video out urging people to do an uprising, urging the military to support a coup. As soon as he announced he was president, President Trump, within minutes, recognized him as president. U.S. allies in Latin America, conservative governments did the same. Some European governments as well. It was a well-orchestrated coup, aggressive social media, a mass protest. And even though they had a month working on this protest, the protest in support of Maduro was bigger because the population supports Maduro. And when there's, even though it's criticism of Maduro, he's not perfect. Even though it's, when there's an attack by U.S. imperialism, it unifies everybody around the government. They might have criticism of Maduro, but they like U.S. imperialism even less.
So the evidence, because we're not really hearing much in our mainstream news, and I'm glad you touched on that the Maduro protests were even larger than the opposition protests, because we're not seeing that in the news.
No, you're not. Yeah. If you look at the faces in the opposition protests, they're mainly white and they're definitely well-off people. They still have that small group of people who are upper middle class and wealthy behind the opposition. They can't win elections. Mm-hmm. And that's why they tried to boycott the presidential election. They knew they were going to lose anyway. Maduro got 67% of the vote. Henry Falcon, the opposition candidate, got about 20%. There were six candidates in the race. Maduro won it easily and would have won it whether it was a boycott or not, and they knew that. So they tried to delegitimize the election by not voting.
So why? Why is the U.S. government doing this? You touched on it a little bit, and I don't know, Christian, you're nodding your head. What would you
say? I would say primarily it's oil, right? We know it's oil. 95% of the Brazilian economy, I'm sorry, Brazilian, Jesus, Venezuelan economy is based on oil. They have billions of dollars in other resources still in the soil, underneath the ground in Venezuela. I mean, the problem isn't the wealth. The problem is, as was stated before, is that Venezuela doesn't really have anybody to sell their goods to. Right? Mm-hmm. The United States is locking them out with sanctions. That's unfortunate. I'm not going to die on the hill of defending Maduro. I don't think that's what the issue is. We can spend another day criticizing Maduro, but we know that this is a coup. Really quick, one of the things I wanted to touch on about the opposition protests is I don't think it's always fair to call them protests. I mean, we can go back in the history. We could look at the violence perpetrated by the opposition. We're talking about warehouses filled with food earmarked for schools being stolen, the burning of veterinary hospitals, the burning of actual hospitals, attacks on public transport. There are reports of Maduro supporters being sniped at.
That's right.
People being shot in the face with shotguns. This is not, these are not the protests we're seeing in D.C. This is not the same tame, struggle that we're seeing. We're seeing a cleverly orchestrated disinformation campaign on behalf of the international status quo. I mean, you can call it capitalism, you can call it the West, but that's what it is. The big crime of Venezuela is the crime of Vietnam. Right, it's the crime of wanting to run your country the way you see fit, and that's just unacceptable to some people.
Yeah, and I was really impressed with reading Kevin's article about the fact that over in Venezuela they seem to have more democracy than we do with the election system, the way the the protections and the audits that are unheard of in the U.S. So,
and around the world.
Around the world. So they have an excellent system in place. And, you know, like you were saying, I guess it sounds like the opposition pulled out, because if they stayed in the election, then they couldn't claim that it was an illegitimate election, that there was fraud. So they had to pull out, correct? Is that
exactly
what?
No, in fact, it was the United States pressured them to pull out. The United States was very angry at Falcon for running. They would have preferred not to have had Falcon run. And I was amazed at the election day for a number of things. First off, the right to vote is in the Constitution. We don't have that. And that changes a lot. Once you have a right to vote, then you, election officials look at, are there enough machines? Are there enough precincts? And they actually react to long lines and lack of machines and change that for the next election. But what was really impressive was at the end of election day, on the end of the day, election days are long and hard. They do a audit, what they call a people's audit, where 52% of the machines at every precinct are audited. They have a paper ballot and the electronic ballot. They empty out the paper ballots, and in public, they read ballot for Maduro, ballot for Falcon, and they go through every ballot and they count them all. All the opposition parties are there to see it. They show the ballot to everybody. It's on video by the election commission. So it's a public audit of 52% of the machines on election day. And then they compare the paper ballot, which the voters have verified when they voted, with the electronic ballot. And if there's no problem, fantastic. The electronic machines work. And so that's something no other country does. Jimmy Carter called it the best election system in the world.
Wow.
I want to add one point about the oil, because it's really, this is really important.
Okay.
Both China and Russia are part owners of that oil. For the loans they have given Venezuela, because the U.S. has shut down finance, Venezuela went to China, Russia, and other nations and got loans. And part of that loan was they got a piece of the action of the oil and the gold. Venezuela is number one in oil in the world reserves, number two in gold reserves. And they have all these minerals that are essential for electronics. And so when you're attacking Venezuela's oil, when the U.S. is attacking Venezuela's oil, they're also attacking Russia and China. And Russia has a battalion of troops in Venezuela. They have military equipment in Venezuela, including bombers. And they've told the United States, don't intervene militarily. So it's a this is a global geopolitical conflict. And it, so it's about oil and controlling the backyard of the United States, the Monroe Doctrine. This is a time for the Monroe Doctrine to end. And this is a gigantic error by Trump. He's going to be regretting the mess he's getting the United States into here.
And where are we at now? Because I understand the opposition was Guaido was trying to get the military to intervene and assist. But right now they're supporting Maduro, correct?
Yeah, there was a handful of officers that decided to rise up. It wasn't much, and they were already arrested and put down. The military has come out in support of the Maduro government.
Okay, so now I guess the scary thing is that we're hearing more and more that if we're trying to pull the strings from within Venezuela and it's not happening, what are potentially the next steps, which we could talk about John Bolton's, hashtag yellow memo pad and his 5,000 troops to Colombia, which Miguel, you have your background and connections in Colombia. So how do you see this playing out and Colombia's involvement?
Okay, importantly, now these two countries, Colombia and Venezuela, that always have been very good brothers since the foundation of the nation 2 centuries ago, they were just one big country called La Gran Colombia. And Simón Bolívar was the founder father of these countries. Mm-hmm. There had been a very long story of a good relation between the countries, despite some borders issues. Example was there was some dispute about the sovereignty in the Gulf of Maracaibo. We were talking in the 70s, they were talking about the possibility to a conflict because Colombia was disputing some territory there. But this situation, now Colombia is, United States trying to use Colombia as a military foot to invade Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
We are really concerned because this can become the Latin American Vietnam. And the situation is that in this moment, no by John Bolt means that the military presence of the United States in Colombia is going to increase. At the peak of the military presence of the United States in Colombia was in the year 2000, there were more or less 1,000 contractors and military members. But by after that, little by little, there was decreasing that number. And in 2014 was maybe around 100. But now we are talking about approximately 800 military contractors, between military personnel and military contractors. This is going to be increased with this. They are increasing the presence since year 2017. And in this moment, United States has a presence with this military personnel in near 9 military bases in Colombia. One is the air base Palanquero in the Magdalena Medio, in the Plains, the API military base, the Navy bases. There is military personnel from the United States. And the United States has 51 buildings with a value of $22 million in Colombia. So the situation is that people in power now in Colombia, the ruling class, are really extreme right-wing politicians, and they agreed to be used as a tool by the United States to invade Venezuela. And we are thinking that they are gonna do it to not in the Caribbean, because there is presence of military vessels from Russia in the Margarita Island. So they are thinking maybe to do these actions, military actions, to the Amazonian border. Colombia and Venezuela have very long border in the Amazonians. And they're trying to use Peru, Brazil, troops from Peru, Brazil, and Colombia to create military conflicts in that region in Venezuela and disseminate the conflict.
Yeah, I was going to touch on, who are the allies on each side and who are the opposition, with the right wing, increasing right wing governments in South America. So right now we would have Colombia would be supportive of the opposition, Guaido. Brazil, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Yes, absolutely.
Chile?
Chile, for sure. There's a group called the Lima Group. There's a group called the Lima Group that makes up of a lot of Latin American countries who are right-wing countries. But the interesting thing is, the Organization of American States, which is usually very controlled by the United States, tried to pass a resolution to recognize Guaido and failed. They could only get 16 votes, less than a majority of the members of the OAS to support that. So that's a very positive sign.
Yeah.
Now, Colombia, I think, well described Colombia's military footprint there. And I essentially see Colombia as the Israel
for the United States in Latin America. They are, you know, ever since Plan Colombia and the militarization of Colombia, Uribe and the right-wing control of the government, it's gotten to be more and more of an Israel for the United States. That's the dirty work. And in fact, if you look at the 2002 coup of Chavez that lasted for 48 hours, the president of that coup, when he was forced out of office, fled to Colombia.
Pedro Carmona.
That's right. The recent assassins, when there was an assassination attempt, the reports are they were trained in Colombia. And so Colombia is very involved in this, and Colombia is a very important player. And now, of course, Brazil on the southern border is lovely. And the U.S. has done military drills with these groups as well. So this is U.S. has been building toward this for a long time. But it would be a big mistake because Venezuela has a military of 20,000 troops. They have a National Guard and police. But when these threats of military attacks started to develop, Maduro created civilian militias.
Yep.
1.5 million people trained as militias. 1.5 million people armed and trained, 20,000 military plus police and National Guard. This is not an easy battle for the United States, Colombia, and Brazil. So they're going to have to think very carefully. It's not going to be a cakewalk, a simple victory for Trump to say I'm a great commander in chief. It'll be a mess. And it'll be, in the end, with Russia and China on the side of Venezuela, we're going to see, if it goes that far, and I hope it doesn't, we will see the result of Syria where Russia defeats the United States again.
Really quick, if I could jump in. I mean, we're looking at this in the context of Donald Trump with a 30% approval rating, context of 45% of Republicans saying that the Russians have something on Donald Trump. Okay. So, I mean, Donald Trump is looking for a distraction. He's always looking for a distraction. He's getting slapped around about this wall. He's not the great deal breaker. It just came out that North Korea, big surprise, isn't gonna disarm like anybody actually thought that was going to happen. But, there was this minute there for a couple weeks where I kind of forgot that I was living on planet Earth. I was watching CNN. I was reading the New York Times. And I was absolutely loving the mainstream media kind of tee off on Trump. And I think anybody wanting to call the mainstream media left wing really needs to look at this Venezuela situation. I was watching the World News, was it David Muir, ABC, an hour ago with my wife. And they referenced these militias in Venezuela. And the term they used was the feared militias of Venezuela. The reason these people are armed, the reason you have a militia is to protect the state from the military, right? Because they know that there's definitely a chance that the military can turn. If that's the case, the people themselves are armed. Furthermore, I also heard, you know, you've got the
I think they're armed because of the fear of invasion by U.S. Colombia.
That's definitely a big part of it. The people need to be armed. I mean, Latin America, I mean, really quick, I keep this book here to remind myself of where I came from, Killing Hope by William Bloom. It's the book that radicalized me as a freshman. Anybody that wants to put this coup, and it is a coup, and I'll keep saying that, anybody that wants to put this coup in the proper context can check out William Bloom's Killing Hope. It is probably the best book on the subject, and large parts of it are available for free.
That's right.
Cool. Open sourcing. Yeah. So I guess how real is the threat of U.S. military intervention? And I know I heard
how stable is Donald Trump today? How stable is he going to be tomorrow?
And some are talking.
I think that's exactly right. Donald Trump is the problem. I mean, Donald Trump is floundering in the polls. He's under attack.
And I think that's
the biggest, but I think the Pentagon and the intelligence authorities don't want a war in Venezuela. They can look and see what's happening, and they don't want to go there. When Trump has suggested this in the past, his generals in his cabinet thought he was crazy, and they were very open about saying that's nuts. So if that's the battle, will the foreign policy establishment stop Trump from going forward? Will Trump be told enough information about what he's getting into to realize this would be a mess that would be a negative on his reputation, not a problem?
I think he gets told the information. I just don't think he's paying attention to
it. That's a big problem.
Problem. He's 2 years into his administration. He has terrible approval ratings. So he doesn't have his own war yet. He took over the GW and Obama wars, but he doesn't have his own war. So this is you know, the possibility of a real threat, depending on, you know, who he gets angry at on Twitter.
And he's removed he's removed those generals who were saying no.
Yeah,
you know, they're replaced by Bolton, Pompeo, and Elliot Abrams. Elliot Abrams, who approved the coup against Chavez.
Back mm-hmm. covered up the massacre at El Mozote.
He's a war criminal.
Yeah, he's a war criminal. I mean, we're talking about, I don't even say women, children as young as 10 years old being systematically raped en masse, reports of babies being impaled on bayonets. All the horrors of the Cold War have taken place in Central America, in Latin America, fully funded, fully supported by the U.S. government. And surprise, Elliot Abrams, he's back.
A major player, and we're bringing him back in because we haven't had enough. We haven't had a recent coup. We haven't had recent enough chaos for especially not for this administration. So this is, yeah, you know, he really sounds, you know, like he's a very intelligent man, but he sounds like he's...
Oh, he's very intelligent.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
And from the stories that you were just saying, and I've been doing some looking up, you know, the way he accepts the role of what had to take place and somewhat acknowledging it, but saying, you know, it was what had to be done.
Yeah, brown people wanted to decide.
We're getting close to evil when, you know, you're talking about children and, you know, the brutality of what was done to, just genocide.
That's why what you're doing on this show is so important, and why it's so important for people who care about peace and justice to get informed about this and not be fooled by the bipartisans in Washington, D.C., because both parties are complicit. Not be fooled by the corporate media, which is part of this, this charade, this false narrative, and know what's really going on and come out and say no. U.S. out of Venezuela, end the sanctions, end the threats of war.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I did want to touch on what can we do? I feel helpless when you see, you know, the past history of what's gone on and what this looks like is about to unfold. What do we do? What do our viewers do?
Well, I'm not convinced it's going to unfold. I mean, I think we can stop. Okay. I think we can stop it. Let's not start from a self-defeated position.
Yeah.
It's Trump is, you know, not predictable, not stable, and under a lot of pressure, and could do something very stupid. But I think we have a lot of power at our fingertips. I mean, we can change the narrative. And I've seen so much good writing on Venezuela, so much good analysis on Venezuela. I think it's our job, everyone listening to this, and for us to go, when we see positive, clear thinking, share it, comment on it, share it with politicians. Let politicians know we know the truth. Let them know. How can you say it wasn't a fair election? We had 150 international observers at the Venezuelan election. They all said it was a fair election. Give me a break. It's an outright lie. How can we say that the Venezuela is being violent against nonviolent protesters? The evidence is clear, as was said. The protesters were violent, extremely violent.
Yeah.
They tried to fool people. So the facts are clear on against what the U.S. is doing. Our job as activists is to change the narrative, get the truth out, so they can't get away with this.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we have a couple of progressive Dems that are out there in opposition. So I guess we have to influence our representatives.
Yeah.
And I know, what's that?
So like Bob Menendez, the guy who supports the Cuban embargo. I mean, I don't understand how he could be considered this great Latino leader when
his
career is built on the suffering of Latino people, right?
Right.
I'm sure he's doing great things for immigrants in New Jersey, but he's a Latino and he's a politician. He should be doing that anyway, right? Mm-hmm. I was raised to believe you don't get rewarded for doing what you're supposed to do. And, you know, helping people out. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. That's your job as a politician. But supporting that embargo in Cuba is vicious. And those are his people. He's a Cuban. He's a Cuban exile, right? And now he wants to do the same thing with Venezuela, right? Yeah. With Democrats like these, who needs Republicans?
Yeah.
We have to start demanding that Congress take responsibility. Under the Constitution, they have the power to declare war. The president cannot unilaterally do this.
Yeah.
And I think we have to start demanding of members of Congress
that they insist that Trump come to Congress so we can debate this as a nation. That way we can make sure the facts get out. I mean, we have a corporate media that will try to overwhelm us, but we have a much bigger media and we have a much more credible media. The social media has more credibility and reaches more people than the corporate media does. So we should insist on Congress requiring the president to come to Congress before any military action is taken. There's no need for urgent military action. We're not under attack by Venezuela. It's not a defensive attack. It's an offensive effort. And Congress needs to be involved in that. They need to be. And if they do, then we can influence Congress like we did when Obama tried to go into Syria. We stopped him. We stopped him because Congress said, we're going to vote on this. People influenced their members of Congress. He couldn't get the support.
Yeah.
So we got to do the same thing with this. We got to say no, and we got to insist that Congress play its role.
Yeah.
I just want to add something. One more thing really quick. And I said this last time I was on your show, Diane. And again, thanks for having me. But again, just keep this in your back pocket. Mm-hmm. Anytime Donald Trump is supposed to be the good guy, that should set up a red flag. Yeah. If Donald Trump is talking about democracy and freedom, all right, let's find out what he's really trying to say, right? He supports the bombing in Yemen. He supports the fascists in Brazil. He was indifferent to Puerto Rico. He's indifferent to Mexicans. He's gassing Central American children, right? Like, come on, he's not the good guy. And he's the president of the United States. And I hate to say that as an educator, but it's the truth.
That's right.
Yeah.
I just want to say, don't forget that the direct military intervention of the United States is the last resource.
That's right.
What the United States is trying to do is do it indirectly, using on other countries. Troops, more or less the same number of troops that John Ball riding his yellow notepad.
Notepad.
5,000 troops from Brazil, from, you know, who is in power in Brazil, in Peru, and from Peru and from Colombia.
That's right.
So just keep in mind that we need also raise solidarity and somehow, I don't know, also may hear our voice on the United Nations and other international organisms that have some voice in this conflict.
That's right.
Yeah. So even if we're not bringing our own troops in, we will be influencing Colombia and Brazil and assisting and doing whatever else we can do to make it worth their while, I guess. Do you see that unfolding as a problem, a serious?
And I think this doesn't depend only or exclusively from Donald Trump. 2 days ago, the commander of the South Command in Florida, the general from the United States, was in Bogota. He was visiting Bogota, and he was discussing borders, frontier issues with the Colombian government. But the real truth is they were cooking how intervene in Venezuela.
In Venezuela.
So this is really serious, and it's not just, it doesn't depend only from Trump. I think this is a policy from the United States political system.
That's very true. You know, in Southcom, the head of Southcom has gone to Bogota and other cities in Colombia multiple times to talk about border security in Venezuela and regime change. In fact, there was a before the last presidential election, there was a whole peace negotiation between Venezuela and Colombia, and they were coming to the point of everything agreed to and signed. But on the day it was supposed to be signed, Colombia backed out. The U.S. was in the offices in Colombia with the president when they decided to back out. So, yes, the United States does use Colombia as a pawn. Now, so far, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've read so far is both Colombia and Brazil have been urged to use military force in Venezuela, but both have so far said no to the United States.
Yeah,
that's what I've read so far.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at I don't know how realistic it is, and I hope it doesn't happen. But we're looking at something worse than Vietnam, because this is something that's connected to us land wise, right? And piggybacking on what the other gentleman said, as long as the United States stays out of it, you know, as long as the U.S. military stays directly out of it, let me clarify that. It's not about Yankee imperialism. Mm-hmm. Right? The second the U.S. gets involved, it's all right, we're all fighting against the Yankees. As if it's the Brazilians and the Colombians invading Venezuela, I don't think it'll have that same unifying effect. I mean, it will in Venezuela. I don't know what other countries will do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the political leadership in Brazil and Colombia, even though they won elections, in Colombia the left candidate did better than expected. In Brazil, they had to do a whole lot to make sure that Lula didn't run. In order to win that election. So they're not that strong. They're not that politically strong, really. And if they get involved in a war in Venezuela, that's the kind of thing that destroys government. That's right. There'll be internal conflict in Colombia and Brazil about that. So it's not a simple decision for either of those countries to go forward. So the U.S. is going to put a lot of pressure on to get those countries to make that mistake.
When we hear that these countries are supporting the coup in Venezuela, we have to know that this isn't the entirety of the country,
right? That's
right.
That's right.
The wealthy elites in these countries, backed by the United States, these are the lackeys. I mean, just now in Spain, right? The Spanish came out and supported the coup. No, it wasn't the Spain. The major opposition party, Podemos, just came out with a statement saying that they don't support the coup.
That's right.
So, like, again, listening to the lies of the mainstream media, we know that this support isn't as monolithic as they want us to believe. They want us to think that support for the coup is monolithic, and that's not the case. And that's something we need to keep telling ourselves because we see it in the media constantly.
Very good point. I think you can't forget that OAS vote.
Yeah.
OAS is a tool of the United States. And for them not to be able to pass this in the OAS was pretty astounding. And so I think it's a good sign. I mean, it was 16 votes against it, for it, and 18 against it. So it was close. But still, the fact that they were able to stop it is a very positive sign. And if any country looks at Venezuela carefully, sees those big militias, sees those military National Guard and police, and recognizes that Maduro got 67% of the vote, 9 million people out of a population of 30 million, this is not a cakewalk for any country to go into Venezuela.
Yeah.
And so it's a dangerous decision for anyone to make.
Yeah. Yeah. It will not be an easy regime change right now. It's not. Yeah. So, yeah. So more to come, and we will see how this unfolds. But I know there is the, hands off Venezuela movement, locally there's protests and calling your representatives. So we have to do that. We have to share the unpropagandized news with each other and help each other out. And I guess I would just ask you guys, closing notes. I know we covered a lot in a little bit of time, and we could go on so much further, but Kevin, do you want to give us your closing?
Well, I think that we have a role to play. This is not an easy. This is not going well for the administration. They didn't win the coup. It's an attempted coup that so far has failed. Mm-hmm. The military and the people of Venezuela are against the coup. There's dissent in the United States. We can stop this from going forward. And our goal is not just to stop the military attack, but to end these sanctions. So I think people need to get active and feel like we can actually have an impact.
Yeah, that's true. This has been going on for years. So this is just something that's becoming very heated, but the sanctions have been a problem. So we need to become more aware of what's going on now that this is coming to light.
That's right.
Thank you. Miguel, closing notes from you.
As a Colombian citizen, we are really concerned about the situation in Venezuela. And we know the military conflict start devastation, misery, and blood is going to be affected not only Venezuelan people, only Colombian. And in Colombia, there are a lot of organizations and people who are against this, despite the old media that is trying to poison the mind of people, saying that in Venezuela deserves chain of, because Maduro is a dictator. And something that we need to keep in mind also is that, for example, the insurgents, these the guerrillas in Colombia, they're going to play a role also in military conflict start. They are going to be sort of the watch towers against the invading, against any army that is invading the invading Venezuela, because they are along that border between Venezuela and Colombia, and they are going to play a role there. And also, that's something to keep in mind, that situation, this conflict is going to be just not only in Venezuela, it's going to spread, it's going to be, it's going to be international conflict.
Yeah, and yeah, we could even, as we were saying, although there are right-wing governments right now, there is still a presence of a left. So if this is not, you know, handled correctly, and as we've said, you know, you were saying the people are not all in support of the right-wing government, you can motivate the left of Colombia. And in general, though, I guess it could just create a lot of chaos. And I think one thing we all have to do is become more aware of Southcom and all of the bases that we have down there. Like you said, 9 military bases in Colombia alone? Is that?
Yes, 9 military bases.
The influence and the money and, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we all have to educate each other and find out, you know, what are those bases doing there? What is our purpose? Is it national security, or is it controlling countries' resources, etc., right?
They said that they are there to provide technical support for the Colombian army in its war against the drugs. But really now they are preparing and providing support for a possible invasion.
Just an ally to use. Thank you so much, Miguel. And Christian, closing remarks.
Yeah, I mean, so piggybacking on what you three said, I mean, we need to be firm in our commitment that the United States needs to keep its hands off of Venezuela. We need to arm ourselves with the facts, and we need to get active, right? We need to remember democracy is a verb, it's not a noun. We need to talk to people, we need to talk to our friends, get on social media, educate ourselves, and get the word out there.
Right.
Absolutely. Yep. We have the numbers, so we have to use those numbers, right?
Yes. Right. Absolutely.
We can stop this.
We can. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. I hope we helped our viewers get some propaganda-free news about what is actually going on in Venezuela. And everybody, keep up the good work on getting real information out. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Thank you all for watching.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care.